Hi, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the lunch. And my name is Michal Hrušecký. I'm from a company called CZNIC. And I'm going to talk about open source routers that we are actually making. I want to show you not just the routers themselves, but I would like to speak a little bit about why we do it. And actually, I would like to stress out few pieces of software that we are using and how doing open source actually makes sense and how it enables us to do awesome routers thanks to open source world and communities around the world. So a little bit about our company. It's well known in Czech Republic because we are actually Czech top level domain registry. Legally, we are some kind of association of companies, and but in fact, in our bylaws, we have some statements that we are basically run as a non-profit. And the association of companies is because, Czech technical companies founded us, and they are competing with each other, but they all agree that they need a stable Czech domain and stable internet, and we are supposed to make it happen. Apart from domains, we are doing some other interesting open source development. We are doing BERT internet routing daemon. We are doing Knot DNS server and DNS resolver. We are also doing some education. We are publishing books about IPv6, Git, LibreOffice, and stuff like that. And we have also some TV series that teaches people how to use internet in a safe way. So we are trying to do good and educate people about what to do and what not to do on the internet. And we are also doing those Wi-Fi routers. How did we get there? And why we are actually doing routers? It all started with good old Turris. This is the first router that we made. It's PowerPC based. It had two cores. It had 2 gigs of RAM, some storage, quite big for a router. The commodity routers that you buy in grocery store have something like 8 megs of RAM, if you are lucky. So it was quite a powerful hardware, and our goal wasn't actually to make a router. We just needed a powerful hardware that we can give to people. We gave it to people in Czech Republic, and the only condition was that they will allow us to spy on them. Basically, our goal wasn't to sell more ads or something like that, but our goal was to actually figure out who's attacking home users and how's the security at people's home with the internet. So we developed some software that reported some suspicious activities, sent us firewall logs, and even acted as a part of honeypot. Kinda. We get to the honeypot later. And we got all these data and we did some security research on top of it. Apart from that, since we were doing router, we decided to do it right. So we provide security updates, and not only security updates, but also feature updates. We are not restricting features based on model, but whatever can run, we are trying to provide it even to those old routers, even the new features that we are still developing. And we obviously give people a root account on their router because it's their device, so they deserve to be root. And they deserve to be in control of their devices. So we did this, and then our colleagues were going on conferences around the world and presenting what security research they did and what they found. And they found out that apart from the security research that was really interesting for some people. People were really interested in the router itself because they said that it's a cool device and they want it as well. But we basically did the device by ourselves. We gave it to people in Czech Republic because it was financed by money from Czech domains. So we didn't felt it was right to basically give it to anybody around the world when basically Czech people paid for the domains and gave us the money to make it. So we did something that people can actually buy, and it was called Turis Omnia. I had a talk here 2 years ago when we were building it. It's something that people can buy. All our spyware is optional. You can still join our research security research program, so you can still send us all the data that you collect and help us improve security on the internet. But it's your device, you can do whatever you want. You can reinstall it, you can run different distribution like OpenSUSE. And it's even more powerful, and it's interesting. One other interesting part is that it has ARMv7, so it's much more mainstream platform. And it has some switch, plenty of ports, SFP, some PCI Express slots, mSATA. Basically, we put in everything that we thought that might be useful. So it does everything. The downside of doing everything and having everything is the price tag. It's between 200 and 300 euros. And people were saying that they really love the device, but they would prefer if they can... they don't need all those stuff that we put in. That they would like it just with one PCI Express, and they don't need all those Ethernet ports and stuff like that. And can we make it a little bit cheaper, please? So we tried to make everybody happy. And we came up with a new router that we are currently running on Indiegogo campaign. And we actually made the goal, so it's going to be done. We met the goal something like last week. And we are trying to make everybody happy. And how do we do that? Well, we decided to make it modular. So I have it here. So basically what we have is the CPU module. It's this one. It has just CPU, USB 3, and it starts from $29. And yeah, it has gigabit Ethernet. But if you need more, you can just buy another extension module, plug it in, and you can have another capabilities. Like this is a PCI Express with Wi-Fi card. We have some switches. Some of them can be even chained. We have SFP, so you can decide what components you need, and you can extend it as much as you want. Well, there are some technical limitations, but within that, you can extend it. And if you don't need those additional interfaces, you don't have to buy them. Is it still a router? Well, it can route. It can have even 25 Ethernet ports, gigabit ones. It can have Wi-Fi. So it is a router. But in more general sense, it is actually kind of single board computer that can be made into a router. It is. It doesn't have any GPU, so it's not your multimedia center, but it has gigabit, it has USB 3, so and it has plenty of extensions, so you can make it what you want, and it can be even your home server. So, little side note, it comes with U-boot, at least this version. We are actually pushing all the patches to upstream, and quite some are there already. So we will probably at some point rebase even on newer U-boot. It has Marvel Armada 3720, and it will be shipping with 4.14 kernel. So it looks promising from OpenSUSE point of view. So let's take a look how it actually works. Ludwig did a live release, so I decided to do at least a live demo. So we have a grep, and let's see how far we will get. Basically, what we did, I was speaking with Andreas here. We downloaded OpenSUSE Tumbleweed image, basically put it onto the flash drive. Currently, we copied DTB on the flash drive as well. But in the end, we hope that we will somehow handle DTB inside U-boot in the production unit. So hopefully you wouldn't need even that. And it's starting booting. And hopefully we will get to the lucky ending, happy ending. It worked, sir?
Can you explain DTB,
DCB? Yeah. For those who don't know, there is something called device tree on ARM devices, which basically describes the hardware. And it's called, device tree binary is DTB. And yeah, all those devices have support in the kernel. And you just need to say which peripherals are where connected and how to access them. So that's what the DTB is for. We have SPI NOR, where it's already U-boot. We will probably have somehow DTB inside as well in the final units. This is just a prototype. So basically, when we copy the DTB over to Tumbleweed image, it booted like this. And we have OpenSUSE running on top of it. But apart from that, we are developing our own system for it because, well, we want to make it not only secure, but also user-friendly and bring actually security not only to advanced users, but to some home users. And we are trying to simplify those security features that you might be interested in. So even beginners can configure VPN and stuff like that. Well, one use case for that, and what we actually decided that would be a nice fit, is Nextcloud. Some people are asking for it, and actually, it makes sense to combine our efforts because what Nextcloud guys are doing is they are trying to get you easy way how to self-host and manage your data in private way, so you have control over your data. And what we are trying to do is make sure that your home network is secure and that your gateway to your home network is secure. So we actually have something for kind of ultimate self-hosting, something that can be running in your home, doesn't take that large amount of electricity. You have a root account on it. You have those automatic updates. So it's always secure. And we have some additional security features that we are providing. We have a nice web interface that allows people to actually set up the device from the start. So yeah, it makes sense. So as I said, we have a nice, easy open VPN support. So people can create a VPN server on our routers really easily. There is a web-based wizard that will basically create certification authority for you and will let you generate a client certificate and client configurations. It's not that hard, but even though I know how to do it manually, it's tedious work, and you don't want to generate SSL certificates using OpenSSL and remember all the parameters, and in months you will forget how you did it, and yeah. So we did easy OpenVPN support. We have automatic updates that gets downloaded, and your router can be updated regularly. You can just set it up once, and then it will stay up to date, and all the security issues will get patched. So even the we have Nextcloud packages ready. So your Nextcloud will get updated even if you access it just via the Nextcloud application on your cell phone or something else. And even if you don't log in to the Nextcloud, you can have it updated automatically by the system. Newly, we have even some web interface to actually format and set up hard drive so it will be mounted. And there are still some things that we plan to do and that we are working on, and that's extend the web interface to actually allow setting up a RAID and make it even easier to install the Nextcloud from the web UI. So that's what we plan to do, and it makes quite sense with MOX because, yeah, it doesn't have to have all those Ethernet ports and Wi-Fis. It can be just a NAS box. We actually have an extension module that provides four USB 3 ports, so you can connect hard drives from the grocery store that you thought that you will be buying your router from. One thing that we had on our routers from the beginning was kind of honeypot. And it was something that we dedicated to our routers. It was one of our cool features. But people kept asking whether they can run it even on their server. And we actually made it possible now. It's called Honeypot as a Service. And basically how it works is honeypots are cool and fun, and it's really fun to lure attackers into your honeypot and see what they are doing, yeah? But there is still some small risk. If they are clever enough, they might try to break through and they might escape at some point. So the solution is let somebody else run a honeypot for you, and we will do it for you. You can register on our website and install simple proxy package. It's available in Leap15 and Tumbleweed. And this proxy package will basically do man in the middle on the attacker and send him to our servers. So he will think that he actually attacked your router and he's stepped closer to building his own botnet. But in fact, he's running on CZNIC servers in Honeypot, and you are just forwarding him there. To show you how it looks, this is the website, and when you log in, we have some global statistics. So even if you don't participate, you can see. Who is the most evil country? And you can even get some data of what attackers are usually doing. But if you register, you can add your devices and you can see who was attacking actually you and what password were they using and how many commands did they run. And you can actually take a look at the whole session, what the attacker was trying to do. And you get also statistics per your devices, so you can see that your router is hated by China, and your server is hated by Poland, and stuff like that. So it's fun. So that's one of the services that we developed for our routers, but then they split to separate project, and now you can use it even on your server. And you don't need the router to actually use it. Another thing that allows us to do quite some stuff on our router is open source software called Suricata. What is it good for? It's good when your simple firewall, where you just block ports, is not enough. And if you want to have some more information about what's going on in your network and basically what's going on between internet and your network. It's intrusion detection and prevention system. It works with some kind of network flows, and it can okay, sorry for the delay. Batteries run out. So, where was I? Suricata. It can look much deeper inside the packet, and it can actually parse the data that are going through and interpret them somehow. So, you can log the information, you can then process it somehow. I think on the first day there was a talk by Peter Chanik about SysLogNG, and he showed quite some examples what you can do with logs that contain interesting data. And yeah, he loves to play with logs, and in his talk he actually made it sound interesting looking at the logs. So if you get the data, you can do plenty of that stuff with data. But apart from logging what's going on and doing some statistics and maybe even getting some alerts, it's also interesting that you can actually write the rules. You can detect the stuff that you are interested in, get some alerts, and you can even block the stuff. So what stuff you can actually do from the traffic when it's actually most of the time encrypted anyway? So, you can get all the unencrypted communication, which is basically, nowadays there is a DNS. Most of the time, people still don't use TLS for DNS. But even in encrypted traffic, there are stuff like certificates that are presented when you are connecting, SNEs. Another interesting talk that was here yesterday, I think. There was a TLS 1.3 talk. And SNEs wouldn't be available in new TLS, but you still get some information about certificate. And you can get IP address, MAC addresses, how long did the connection take, amount of data, and stuff like that. And you can alert when you see something interesting. So, some examples. Okay, so one more slide about what you can do with it. You can monitor devices you don't trust. For example, if you get a device that is not so friendly as ours, and you don't have a root account on it, and you have a new TV, and you have no idea what the TV is doing on your internet, or your washing machine, or your fridge, and you want to know what they are doing, you can spy on them and see how much they are connecting to somewhere. If they are using unencrypted traffic, you can see what they are actually doing. My TV is regularly browsing Baidu for some reason, and I haven't discovered why yet. You can try to detect this kind of stuff, There is also a large collection of rules available for Suricata already, which are trying to detect various malwares and behaviors that malwares are doing. Typical behavior that some malwares. And yeah, you can write your own rules, detect what you care about, and block it. So this is just some example of what you can get from the flow. You get some information when the session started, how long it lasted, how many data was transferred. Let's take a look at the interesting bits. For example, if we get a TLS connection, so basically somebody accessing a server in encrypted way, you still get information about what server, what company issued the certificate, usually what server it is issued for, and much more data. And everything you can see here is actually what you can match and create alerts on top of, and what you can actually use to block stuff. So you can just write some simple rules that say, hey, if there is a facebook.com in certificate, block this connection. And yeah, it wouldn't help you if the device already has established secure connection, but it will actually allow you to block the establishing of the secure connection. So, this one. One thing that we are using it for, we have a website that we developed. It's basically a demo website of our Rotary interface. So we can look at it later a little bit. And one thing that we are using Suricata for is basically to give you some overview of your traffic. So in our router, we are using Suricata to monitor your network if you install it. And then we are collecting some data about where you went, which devices connected where, what protocols, and we are getting we are matching all those flows with the names of the service that you are accessing. The interesting part about this is that you don't see just the IP address of the server that you try to access. If we saw a DNS query before, we remember it, so we know what host name your computer was searching for, and the IP was the answer to. And if we see SSL handshake, and we can deduct a host name from it, we use that one, as it is even more precise information. Why is it important? Is that you have those web hostings that have tons of websites on one IP, and you might be interested in which one was the computer actually trying to access. Whether it was some cooking site, whether it was some how to make a bomb site. So yeah, you need to distinguish between those. And that's what we are doing, and we are presenting it in a user-friendly way. So since I use this opportunity to show you this site, let's take a look at what else do we have here. This is our web interface. I was already speaking about some settings. Yeah, one important lesson that we learned from all those honeypots, if you remember it. Yeah, if you look at them, most of the passwords and login informations are quite simple. Yep. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Let's see. Okay, so now it's visible. Yeah. So, yeah. Sorry. Did you saw the stuff that I was showing before, or were you just afraid to ask that you don't see it? So yeah, this is the list of people that were trying to attack one of my computers, and yeah, you see even here that one thing that people are trying is Ubuntu. There is also similar default passwords for Ubiquiti routers and stuff like that. So one thing that we did in our web interface is that there is a first run wizard that you have to go through to actually get access to the internet. And the first step of this wizard is setting up your password. So there is no default password, and you have to set it up before you connect to internet. Then we have these notifications. Those can be sent to your email address as well. So even though router updates automatically, you get emails when it does and what it installed, and you still have some informations about it. One thing that we are doing a little bit differently is also that we are doing DNSSEC validation by default. Who of you don't, well, it's easier to ask who heard and know what is DNSSEC? Okay. So about the third of audience, that's kind of good. Yeah, DNSSEC is basically a way to actually sign your zone data. And yeah, basically your ISP is usually providing you with a DNS resolver. But unless you verify the keys and verify the data that he is sending to you, he can try to redirect you somewhere else to some other server, even if you try to access something. That's commonly used in some cafes and restaurants. Basically, you ask for some server and they will redirect you to their portal. So to avoid being redirected to malicious site, like a portal, you can use DNSSEC to validate the answers. And that's something that we have enabled by default. And because quite some ISPs have broken DNS servers, we can run full resolver on our router, and it will resolve DNS by itself. So you can avoid broken DNS servers of your ISP. And what I wanted to show as well is VPN configuration, how it looks like. I said that it's simple. At the beginning, you just say that you want to generate certification authority, and it will do everything. And yeah, it shows some settings, but you can change the IP, but if you don't, it will work. And it allows you even to make it so that all the traffic will go to your VPN. So if you are in some countries that you know that they are spying on you, you can use VPN, if they wouldn't block everything, to actually connect and go to your home network and send all your traffic to your home. And when you want to create some client for your VPN, you just enter the client name. Yeah, is it kind of visible? Okay, yeah. Yeah, usually all these data projectors has a lousy resolution, so everything is big. But at this conference, we have a high resolution beamer, so. Yeah, so you just enter the name of your client, click create button, and it will generate the configuration. And then you can get a config that contains all the certificates embedded. So you can just have one file, copy it to your Android phone or your computer, and connect to your VPN. Another interesting part that we did is some measuring of network connectivity. So we have some software that can periodically measure your speed, so you can have an idea of how good your connection is, and when you are sharing it with multiple people, how much bandwidth do you have at some point in time. So I think that was all that I have prepared. Few pointers at the end. That's our main website. The site that I was clicking to and showing you how it works is called demo.twist.cz. Honeypot as a service can be found on Haas, Nick CZ. Twist Mox, which is the new modular router, you can get on Indiegogo, and we are making open source devices, so there is a link to our GitLab that contains plenty of projects that are that have sources for the stuff that we are using in our routers. So thank you for your attention, and now do you have some questions?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. It's very, very enlightening. So if some of us would like to contribute software and feedback, that's understandable. What about the hardware engineers who are interested in taking your designs, extending them, manipulating, improving, or maybe making their own modules for the new architecture?
Okay, so regarding the hardware, I didn't mention it that much, but we have full schematics online. So you can read up how the hardware is connected. And
about the layout schematics is good. Layout is better. KiCad, something open source?
Unfortunately, I think that the layout was done in some proprietary software because our hardware guys had troubles making it in open source one. For some reason, I'm not a hardware guy, so I don't know the details, but they ran into some troubles in there. And we don't currently release a whole PCB layout as it is, because yeah, we are trying to make those routers and we don't want cheap knockoffs, but we will release it once we stop making them. And regarding the new Twist Mox, there is some specification. Yeah, I'm not sure whether I will find it. Probably I wouldn't find it right now, but somewhere on our website there is a complete specification about the connector, what we are using for. Yeah, for what we are using for connecting various modules is basically PCI connector that can be found anywhere. It's not some special proprietary connector. The tricky part is wiring. We are not using the classical PCI, but we are using we are passing through PCI and SGMI and various other stuff. There is also electricity and yeah, some power and stuff like that. But we have some documentation online, what you can find on which pins, and that's probably all you need to develop your own module.
So a couple of questions. First of all, obviously when some of us power users are trying to hack on those devices, then you know we can get by with having an SSH interface and so on. What do you think would be necessary, or what do you see as the missing bits in order to make the browser comfortably usable for average users on an open source basis? Like, do you think it would be possible to take the web interface and just package that for open source?
Well, the tricky part is that the web interface is kind of tied to
Config files of OpenWRT.
We are based. Yeah, I think I maybe didn't mention it, but we are running on our routers OpenWRT Linux distribution. Therefore, stuff that is available for OpenWRT is available for our routers as well. And the tricky part is if you want to have a similar user experience on OpenSUSE based system, OpenWRT has some specifics regarding the configuration of the stuff, so you would have to re-implement that part. But the web interface is actually written in Python, and nowadays it's not that tied to the actual OpenWRT. There is some backend and front end. And you just need to, there's some generalization, some abstraction layer in between. So you just need to re-implement the backend and you can use all the front end. Or there's a SUSE manager, right? And I think WebYAST is dead, right? Yes. Yes. Or do you have any more questions?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, sir.
You talked about this Suricata framework. Did I understand correctly that this is something that you have developed on your own?
No. That's one of the open source projects that we use. There's a huge community around it. It's and we just kind of abuse it to currently do the simple overview of your network traffic. In the future, we want to implement even the rules, but it's a generic open source project, and being open source actually enables us. It's a nice example where being open source actually enables us to do quite some interesting stuff without too much effort, without basically writing it from the scratch. We can use open source software and provide our users with extra functionality.
Right, but there's not just one DPI open source project, right? There's also one called Snort, and I don't know, a couple of others. Do you have any overview, like what the differences are and why Suricata is best?
Well, I wouldn't say that I have a huge overview of all of those, and we just picked the Suricata because we liked it. Yeah, if you like Snort, you can use Snort. I think we have it in our repositories as well at some point. Not sure about the current state, whether it builds or stuff like that. And not sure whether other stuff from this area builds and how well they run. We just took some extra efforts to integrate Suricata because we liked it. And we like the community around it.
Then third question, the Honeypot as a service. If we install that on an OpenSUSE system, are there any configuration settings necessary, or if you're redirecting the traffic from the local system to your servers, is there any QoS assurance or traffic shaping going on to assure that they cannot DOS the actual router?
I don't think there is some QoS. You can probably set it up in your system. And there is some minimal configuration that you have to do basically if you want to track your, when you want to track stuff, you have to generate some token and insert the token into the configuration file. And I think that's the most important part. Then, yeah, you obviously want to run it on port 22, on SSH port. So you probably need to move your SSH somewhere else, open up the port on the firewall, and make sure that you can connect to the different port before, cutting yourself out of your box. But I think I actually wrote a blog post how to do that when I packaged Honeypot as a service for OpenSUSE. So it's somewhere on Planet OpenSUSE. But the configuration should be pretty easy and pretty simple. So most of the time you just need the token from the website, and if you are happy with the default settings, then you are all done. QoS, you have to implement yourself somehow.
Yeah. Two things. I mean, I don't think you mentioned when the Turris Mox starts delivery or when it should be done.
Current plan is that most of the base modules should be, I think we promised something like October, so generally end of the year. Some of the new modules, like the USB one and pass-through modules, will take some extra time, and I think the scheduled date is something like December, because those are the ones that we started to work on later, and they are more complex. So it took us some more time to prototype them, and there is still some work ongoing on those.
Actually, I came up with a third question, but first a second. I saw you opened the or kept the fundraising open a little longer. Are you going to extend it again?
We cannot extend it again, but I think that it can be changed to in-demand mode or something like that, where people will be able to buy additional devices and stuff. But that's something that our marketing and business people do. I'm just a developer, so I don't see into that stuff that much. There might be some. It might get a little bit more expensive, and it will eventually get to retail. But if you support us now in the campaign, there is some discount for that.
Yeah, it's like a week longer, I think, it's running.
Yeah. It should end next Thursday.
All right, cool. And then last one was, like you mentioned, OpenWRT that you guys use and some other projects. I mean, how much do you guys contribute back upstream?
Yep, we are trying to get to, but we contributed some patches to OpenWRT. Currently, we are, it was, there was some forks and difficult situations in OpenWRT community. And in between, we accumulated plenty of changes that we are trying to clean up now. And basically ditch everything that we forked and didn't have to. And we are trying to polish all the patches and send it upstream. Regarding the Mox U-boot that you saw is basically almost upstream. I think that my colleague said me that he had to refactor some patch. So it might not be in upstream yet everything, but there is a huge part that is already upstreamed, and the plan is to have everything upstreamed. We want to upstream the kernel support as well, where we are waiting for some other subsystems also to upstream their patches. But we will try to push everything upstream as we can. Yeah, we are trying to. Yeah, we had quite some changes in the old OpenWRT 3 before it settled somehow, and it's hard to merge, but we are trying to clean it up and slowly push everything.
Have you tested much with pfSense, Monowall, or these class of router software packages?
pfSense is BSD, right?
Yes.
We don't have BSD, we have Linux. So unfortunately, that blocks us from using pfSense. So we didn't try it, but we actually, there was some question on our Indiegogo. Somebody asked us about BSD support. We told them that basically, well, we have limited resources, so we are trying to focus on what we ship by default. But they said that CPU shouldn't be that that hard, and it should be somehow supported in FreeBSD. So yeah, somebody might do report for OpenSUSE. Andreas did a lot of work on Omnia. So yeah, if we get somebody like Andreas in FreeBSD, there will be FreeBSD port. There.
So there are no closed firmware blobs necessary to run this device.
In Omnia, we were using ATH10K Wi-Fi cards, which requires firmware. But all our cards are not soldered in, so you can replace them. And I'm not sure about Armada and ATF and those weird secure V8 stuff. Do you know, Andreas?
For the Armada 8K, on the Macchiato bin, there is a free RTOS-based blob that is being used for a Cortex-M processor that's part of the SOG. And for that, I've not yet found the corresponding sources. But in theory, it should be possible to rebuild that.
Yeah, well, all the software that we are compiling is open source, but we are using some tools to flash U-boot. I'm not sure how well they are in supported by Marvel. That's something that our kernel guys mostly deal with, but kernel is open source, U-boot as well. User space, yeah. Not sure about this really, really low-level stuff.
So flashing U-boot should be possible via U-boot itself,
yeah,
which requires to have a working U-boot on the device. If you have one, then you're good. If it's somehow bricked, then I think there's closed tools from Marvell for the 3700. I mean, would probably be possible to reverse engineer that, but that would take someone with the time and desire to do that.
Yeah, we would have a desire. I'm not sure whether we will have the time right now, and frankly, I have no idea what the state on those low level stuff. But yeah, it can boot over the serial with those Marvel tools. And we are shipping with, yeah, the MOX has a SPI NOR, and we are shipping with the U-boot already. So you have a working U-boot that you can start from. Anything else? No? Then thank you for your attention. And if you have any extra questions, find me somewhere out there, or come to our forum, or mail us, or something. Thanks.